Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
You probably heard President Obama refer to his desire to have an all-of-the-above approach to our energy policy, oil, wind, solar, but the list never includes thorium. That's right, thorium. Richard Martin is a longtime journalist and editorial director of Pike Research, a leading clean energy firm. You may remember his cover story on thorium's seemingly miraculous abilities in Wired magazine a few years ago. Now he's expanded that into a book. It's called Superfuel, Thorium, the Green Energy Source for the Future. Richard Martin, welcome to WNYC.
Brian, it's a pleasure to be here.
And listeners may or may not remember their periodic tables, but let's try and jog their memories. Look down toward the bottom left, folks, because I know you all have your periodic tables out. Tucked between actinium and protactinium, there it is, symbol TH. So what exactly is thorium, and why do you say it's so special? Did we lose our guest? Richard, are you there?
Yeah, I am here.
Go ahead.
So thorium has a couple of key differences from uranium, including the fact that you can't make bombs out of it. It's not fissile, it's fertile. And the difference being that it doesn't matter how much you cram together in a small space, it's not going to blow up and it's not going to lead to a chain reaction. The other thing is it's far more abundant than uranium. It's about as common as lead, and it's distributed around the world, so there will never be a Saudi Arabia of thorium, as it were. The U.S. has plenty, India has a lot, China has a lot, and so on.
So in contrast, in contrasting it to uranium, you're saying this was another choice for running nuclear power plants?
Absolutely. And in fact, the U.S. did just that back in the 60s. We had a program at Oak Ridge National Laboratory in Tennessee to build what were called molten salt reactors that use thorium. And it was very successful. It proved that these reactors often offered a lot of advantages over conventional uranium reactors, but that program was shut down in 1973, and the director of Oak Ridge, Alvin Weinberg, who's kind of a forgotten figure in the history of American nuclear power, was actually fired by the Nixon administration, and that's when things kind of started to go off the rails for the nuclear power industry in America.
Well, would nuclear power using thorium have the same risks, see Fukushima, Japan, as nuclear power using uranium?
Absolutely not. And Superfuel, the book, is not just about this element. It's also about a new reactor technology which uses liquid fuel. In other words, there are no solid fuel rods. The core of the reactor where the fission reactions take place is actually a liquid. That has several inherently safe features, one of which is, if you, again, think back to your high school physics, when a liquid heats up, it expands. If you expand the liquid, the rate of reaction goes down and the reactor is essentially self-governing. The other thing is that these reactors are basically built like a bathtub. There's a plug in the bottom. It's called a freeze plug. If anything goes out of control, if anything overheats, the plug literally melts. The liquid drains into a shielded underground container that's impervious to earthquakes or anything else. Finally, there's one other that I'll mention, which is these types of reactors, which thorium is particularly well suited to running in, operate at atmospheric pressure. In other words, they don't have those huge containment structures like the ones at Fukushima. If you think about what happened there at Fukushima Daiichi and other nuclear accidents, what happens is not necessarily a meltdown. It's a buildup of radioactive steam that literally blows the top off the building. That can't happen with a liquid fuel thorium reactor because it operates at atmospheric pressure.
So why did thorium lose out to uranium? And one of the reasons that you give in the book that's really fascinating is that it doesn't have a weapons byproduct. It can't be weaponized. Do you think that's why?
That's the simple answer. That's the short answer. And because you can't make bombs with it. And particularly, you know, when you think about the origins of the U.S. nuclear power industry, it was the Manhattan Project. It was to win World War II and so on. And many of the men, and most of them were men, who ran the early nuclear power industry came directly out of that program. There's a more complicated answer, and it has to do with what I would term as technological lock-in, which is a sort of well-known phenomenon where a technology that is not necessarily superior or cheaper or more elegant or you know, works better comes to dominate a given sector because of market forces and political forces and so on. The most prominent example is probably Microsoft Windows. There's very few people who would contend that Windows is the best possible operating system for a computer, but Bill Gates is a very good businessman, and he engaged in some pretty ruthless practices, and so today Windows dominates about 90% of the PC industry. It's the same thing with conventional light water uranium reactors. Very few people would say that's the best possible way to produce power from radioactive elements. But because they were the original form of reactors, because they achieved an early dominance, that's what almost all of the world's reactor fleet is. That's how it's designed today.
So can existing reactors be retrofitted to take on thorium, or do we need to build a whole fleet of new reactors if people were to adopt your idea from scratch?
So that's a good question. There is a U.S. company called Lightbridge, which has been in existence for about 15 years, which is building solid fuel rods using thorium oxide to simply put into conventional reactors. They describe it as putting unleaded gas into your car. The real thorium movement people, the people that I describe in the book Superfuel, believe that's like putting biogas in a Hummer, right? It's not going to achieve what we really need to achieve, which is safe, clean, abundant nuclear power. So the way to do it is to replace coal plants, replace the existing fleet of nuclear reactors, which, by the way, is being operated way beyond their original lifespan, with new liquid fuel thorium reactors, which are smaller, they're cheaper to build. You can build them in a modular fashion, which means you can mass produce them and install them on site. And there's a whole host of financial and economic advantages to doing it that way as well.
Journalist Richard Martin, his new book, Superfuel, Thorium, the Green Energy Source for the Future, the expansion to book length of the very widely read article he wrote about this in Wired a couple of years ago. So on to political reality. We went to whitehouse.gov and searched for thorium. Want to guess how many hits we got?
Probably zero.
Oh, close to zero. Two were from briefing papers on U.S.-China energy relations. One was from a petition submitted by a regular American to the White House about energy independence, total three. So to be honest, is this anywhere near to showing up on the president's desk? And do you hope your book can change that?
Well, certainly I hope my book can change that. But let me put it to you this way. I am very confident that the thorium revival is going to happen. I am much less confident that it's going to be led by the United States. As you probably know, the NRC, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, just issued its first license for a new reactor in about three decades. And it's a plant in Georgia, and it's conventional uranium-based technology. And this is 30-year-old technology that they're talking about building for today's economy and today's energy crisis. And so the political realities, as you say, and frankly, the investing community, the political environment and so on, and the licensing requirements make it very difficult to really establish a new nuclear technology in this country. You mentioned China. It is happening in China. And one of the things that I report in the book is that, according to my sources, because this has not been publicly announced, there's a technological institute in Shanghai that, with government approval, is spending hundreds of billions of dollars to design and develop thorium reactors. And so this is going to happen in China. India has an official government program to build dozens of reactors over the next 20 years or so and gradually convert them to thorium so that their entire nuclear fleet is being run on thorium. It's also happening in Western European countries. So, again, it's going to happen. The question is whether the United States is going to be a leader or a follower.
Do you think that this news that you just delivered about China, plus what we already knew about India, is going to wind up dragging the United States into thorium energy production because they're not going to want to fall behind these emerging competitors?
Potentially, and certainly there are people who will tell you that the announcements coming out of China around nuclear power in general represent a Sputnik moment for the United States. And the way I put it is, if you like being dependent on the Middle East for oil, you're going to love being dependent on China for nuclear technology.
And would we? I mean, do we have thorium deposits here in the U.S., and we just have 10 seconds, but could we be independent in our production of thorium-based energy?
Absolutely. We have about 440,000 tons of thorium. We have enough to run
Where?
The United States for a millennia.
Where?
There's a lot of it in Idaho, and we are mining rare earth. I went to the very briefly.
We don't have time for the story, yeah. I'm sorry to say, but this has been fascinating. Richard Martin, his book is Superfuel, Thorium, the Green Energy Source for the Future. Very thought-provoking. Thank you.
Thanks very much.